The hosts feel it would be a little unkind to present this podcast without just a word of friendly warning. We are about to unfold the story of Frankenstein, a man of science who sought to create a man after his own image without reckoning upon God. It is one of the strangest tales ever told. It deals with the two great mysteries of creation, life and death. I think it will thrill you. It may shock you. It might even horrify you. So if any of you feel that you do not care to subject your nerves to such a strain, now is your chance to. Well, we've warned you.
Hello, and welcome once again to the Frankencast. I'm the mad scientist, Anthony Bowman. My pronouns are he, him, and I'm joined as always by...
your cyber bro, that is Eric Velasquez. My pronouns are also he, him. I feel like that was the most appropriate for this one.
Yeah, so as promised, after a long delay, we're finally talking about Steel and Lace.
It was worth the wait, folks.
Yeah, I had seen this a while back, and I'd kind of forgot, like, I mean, it's basically like the sort of, like, Lady RoboCop kind of, it's from the same era, it's got a similar vibe. Obviously, I guess we should trigger warning right away, like,
oh,
the,
yeah,
the content,
so many
warnings.
Triggers. SAA, you know, the suicide, or, you know, self-deletion.
I mean, this is basically, it's a rape revenge movie, but it's sort of, usually, you know, that's like, the victim becomes the Avenger or whatever. But in this case, it's kind of her, you know, her brother. So obviously we'll get into the more specifics of it as we go, but, it's kind of strange in that way. It doesn't, you know, usually those movies are a lot about like the catharsis of, like, you know, the person who has been harmed taking the power back. And you don't really get that with this because of the way things kind of come together.
Well, you know, and another thing is, like, you mentioned RoboCop, and kind of, sort of, right? It's kind of in a very similar vein. But another thing that it kind of brought to my mind was, and probably because I saw the trailer recently, a little bit of The Crow, but, like, a sci-fi version of that, too. But I guess they're all in the same vein, right?
Yeah, The Crow actually is a little bit more appropriate, because in that, you know, you have the woman who is raped and murdered, and then the you know, the man sort of taking becoming the Avenger on her behalf.
Well, I mean, to be fair, he also gets murdered and some versions raped
too. Yeah, that new Crow,
I don't trust it.
I guess in that same vein, as a little sidetrack here, I don't know, have you seen some of the pictures of the Frankenstein monster in the new Bride movie?
Oh no, but now I will.
He also has some just unnecessary tattoos. I'm hoping that there is a reason. Like, I'm hoping it's like, oh, this is part, like, this, it's like he has like the word hope in cursive on his chest, and I hope it's like, this was cut out of a person, this tattooed part of skin. If it's like the monster went out and got himself a tattoo, it seems very silly to me. But
yeah.
I don't know. Well, I'm gonna stay cautiously optimistic about that one too. We'll obviously be talking about it as it arrives.
It's got Christian Bale, so it can't be completely awful. You know, like Terminator Salvation or whatever. But
and, you know, Maggie Gyllenhaal, like, seems to be you know, she does interesting stuff for the most part. So
We're getting a Dark Knight. We're getting a Dark Knight reunion a little bit.
Oh yeah, that's a good point. I didn't think about that. But yeah, I don't know. We'll see. But you know, when those first pictures of the new Crow stuff came out, everyone was like, "Oh no, this looks like Jared Leto Joker." But I don't know.
You know what this is like. I just realized this. This is exactly the 1980s mohawk and leather jacket aesthetic.
Just
done again, right?
Yeah, you're right.
This is what the kids do, right?
Yeah, it's Hollywood trying to look edgy and not really knowing how to do it. So they're just like, what if we give him a face tattoo? That'll make him look hip and...
Right.
Yeah. That's a really good point.
Right? It just makes you look like a douchebag. I've never seen anybody with a really good face tattoo unless they were Maori or you know, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, that has like a cultural reason for it and not just like I had a little bit too much to drink and walked past the tattoo parlor.
I made bad decisions. All right. So yeah, let's get into this thing a little bit deeper.
Yeah. So in perfect 80s fashion, we start out with like really intense intro music.
So intense.
And there's like sparks kind of like burning across the screen, spelling out the word steel in this like really metallic font.
Exactly. I love that freaking aesthetic from the 80s. Like, you always had the like chrome finish on everything for no reason.
Yeah, and it's so good. Like, it slowly spells out steel, and then right as it finishes, in like pretty pink cursive letters at the bottom, it just adds and lace.
Right. It's so good. So immediately we're going to get into that. The news is reporting this is the Danny Emerson trial. He did an essay on this lady named, by the way, Galatea Morton.
Yeah.
Couldn't be any more on the nose.
Right.
Like, you know, you know the whole Galatea thing?
Okay. Yeah.
It's Daedalus, I believe. Because Daedalus made everything back in the day.
Apparently.
He basically made a woman, a statue of a woman, and the gods gave it life.
Yeah. So, yeah, we'll obviously get into the connection there, but I mean, it's
Pygmalion.
The reason we're talking about it, this movie, you know, like.
It was Pygmalion. I'm an idiot because my family, that's right.
Right. Yes. Yes. Yeah. That's right. That makes more sense. And it it's kind of confusing. Like, people start, they like, her nickname is Gailey. It like took me a little bit to figure out what people were saying. Cause like changing the A sound kind of threw me off as like how that was her nickname. But,
but Galatea, she is to Gailey.
Yeah. So she's like a gifted like piano prodigy who's like at the prime of like her career's kind of starting out. And Danny Emerson is like the heir to the Emerson like real estate empire. Yeah. And so of course, you know, like I mean even now I don't like the idea of like a highly publicized rape case does not seem like, I mean, like we get that with murder a lot, but it seems like when it comes to like sexual assault stuff, the media doesn't like talking about it. You know, I feel like especially if it was like a high profile man, I don't know. I mean, I guess that when there was the, what was that? The Brock Turner thing, that was kind of a big case. So I don't know. I mean, I guess we've never had anything quite like this where like both parties were sort of celebrities in a way.
Well, at least not like this, right? Because there was Me Too and that was kind of after the fact.
Yeah. I guess this is not too far away from like the Johnny Depp, Amber Heard thing. Like, you know, I mean, that wasn't a sexual assault thing, but you know, it was definitely like a celebrities doing violence to each other and being all over the news for a little while.
Right. But also, we have to draw attention to her brother, Albert Morton, is a NASA scientist. Why do we need to know her brother in the news? You know?
Right. They specifically mentioned that he like he quit his job so that he could come home and support her in the trial and everything.
Right.
You know, and
we're
it's like
a lot of narrative to this report.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're definitely using this as a lore dump, all kinds of backstory stuff.
Can we talk about Bruce Davison? Was he familiar to you?
Oh yeah, he's definitely one of those like that guy actors. He's just been in so many things. He usually plays this kind of character. Like, he's always like a very serious kind of smart guy who's like
a little smarmy.
Yeah, slightly villainous, but not usually like full on evil. Just kind of like, you know, like he plays like senators and stuff a lot. You know, like that kind of thing.
Oh yeah, especially ones that turn into goop. Thank you, Adam.
That's what I was thinking.
He has a long story history, so.
Yeah, I was thinking of him from that, but then I was getting like the senator and like Stryker from X-Men mixed up, and I was like, no, that wasn't him, but yeah, that's what it was. Those are that's exactly who he was.
Yep. It's so good.
As the news, it actually, the editing here is pretty like cool. Like, we have like the news report, then we have like scenes from the the trial, and we also have flashbacks of the, you know, the event. And it cuts between them really seamlessly in a way that, like, makes it fast paced and, like, gives you a lot of backstory in a way that, other than the little bit of clunkiness of, like, the journalist spelling a lot of stuff out, it feels like you're getting a lot of information in a way that feels pretty organic.
Right. The one mistake they make is that whenever they go a little bit further, they just retell you everything that basically happened and actually seeing it from her perspective.
Mm-hmm. For what it's worth, you know, when there are movies like this, there is sort of a necessity to depict some of the assault to give the revenge its poignancy, but this does a pretty good job of it being like, you know, it's an unpleasant, violent scene, but it's not a graphically gratuitous scene.
And it also gives us the, what we call her, Galbot? Galibot?
Yeah.
Basically, it gives her catchphrase.
Yeah, like, so it's not just Danny Emerson. It's Danny Emerson and his, like, whole crew of, like, bros, basically. Yeah. It's just a bunch of Wall Street bros who, like, kind of hold her down. But is it actually Danny that says the line, or
yes,
is it?
Because, like, so the bros show up first and kind of surround her and start pushing her around, because that's how assaults looked in the 80s, apparently.
Yeah.
Or early 90s. And but she breaks off and runs towards this person who's at the other end of the alleyway, raising their arms up and as if they were inviting you in, almost a Jesus-like pose.
Yeah.
It's backlit.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But whenever she gets to him, you know, he lifts her up as, you know, your own personal Jesus would. But she knows that everything's going south the moment he says, pretty, so pretty.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, oh, shit, this is another one.
Yeah. The scenes, like, you know, the backlit and everything, it all feels very dreamlike. Like, it feels like we're not seeing the event happen. We're seeing her memory of the event as it happened.
Exactly.
Like, it's all a little, you know, fuzzy.
Maybe
which
hyper.
Which I appreciated, because again, that gives you the way to sort of portray it without having to be too gratuitous about it. It's the way she's processing the events. Once we kind of get to the end of that and sort of like the preliminary trial stuff, we get to the jury reading the verdict.
Not good, because they basically say, we don't have enough evidence to convict him, so
mm-hmm.
he's free to go.
Yeah. Which, you know, I feel like this is one of those things, like, you know, the 80s was very much about, like, the tough-on-crime era,
yeah.
And so obviously we're supposed to be, like, really angry, assuming that the, you know, we didn't see what happens in the trial, but unfortunately, if there was insufficient evidence, then this is the result you would technically want, but obviously we know what actually happened, so obviously we don't want the rapist to get off here, And, of course, the courtroom erupts, you know, like, Danny and his people are all, like, celebrating. They're all excited.
Albert's pissed.
Albert, yeah, he's, like, almost gets, like, sent out in contempt. You know, he's, like, yelling and angry and everything, as he should be.
I mean, court artist. Just random court artist.
Yeah, we get a lot of shots of her, and it's like, what's her, well, you know, why are we spending so much time with her?
Yeah, she's clearly important.
Yeah, and in fact, even Albert goes over to her, and she has drawn, like, you know, meticulous drawing of Galatea, and he takes it from her and rips it up, and, you know, he's like, you're not gonna, you know, exploit my sister anymore, it's all over.
Right.
I feel like we're kind of getting on the outs of the era of the court artist. I don't know if everybody is even familiar with that as a concept anymore, now that, like, cameras are just allowed in courtrooms and stuff.
Right.
But I thought those were, like, it's a neat thing. Like, it's an interesting aesthetic that, you know, it just feels like part of my childhood. You know, you would see it on the news all the time, these, like, sketches of, like, the O.J. Simpson trial or whatever.
And that's where it really kind of seemed to pick up, right? Even though it apparently existed before that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think then the next thing is, like, you know, everybody's kind of leaving. Danny Emerson even winks at Galatea as he leaves, which is just such
a scumbag
dick move.
Yeah.
And Albert kind of tries to, like, escort Galatea out and protect her as, like, the journalists and stuff are swarming around.
Right. He puts her in the stairwell.
Yeah. He, like, closes the door behind her and basically, like, you know, runs interference, tells the reporters, like, you know, leave her alone, like, you know, give her privacy and everything. But then when he goes back in the stairwell, she's gone.
Right. But we also get a shot of the boys celebrating in the limo, where Danny explicitly tells him, hey, you're not just my flunkies anymore. We're all equal partners in everything mm-hmm. going forward. I wonder if he'll betray that because he's a scum.
Right. Yeah.
Foreshadows again.
Right. And they're all, they're like popping bottles in a limo, very, very different results from the trial here. So Albert, when he sees that the Galatea is gone, he goes up the stairs to see, where she went, which is telling right away. Like, if I had left someone in a stairwell, I would think they probably went downstairs and out. But he immediately thinks she went upstairs, and he's right.
Kind of knew her frame of mind, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he gets up to the roof, and she's there, she's shocked at the results. She's crying. She's kind of been, catatonic, in the trial. She's very, in a state of, shock. And
she accuses him of, hey, you pretty much said they were going to go away because of this, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she's like, I don't feel safe now. They're out there in the world with me. And he's like, I'll keep you safe. It's going to be okay. And she says, there's only one safe place now.
That's very important, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, of course, she jumps off the roof. Albert does the classic, falls to his knees and yells no up at the sky.
But this is proof that Bruce Davison was too good for this movie, just because of the sheer pain you could see him writhing around on the floor.
It's that's kind of like a joke scene now. Like, we see it so much, like people parody it, the Star Wars one especially, but like this one it feels real. Like, it doesn't feel cheap. Right. And I think it's definitely it's him. It's his acting abilities really selling it.
Right. Absolutely. But then, because, this movie is this movie, we cut to a shot of literally a sign that says, another Emerson Mini Mall coming soon.
Yeah.
5 years later, by the way, yeah.
Yeah. So this is right at that time, the 80s was all prosperity and, all this sort of, corporate capitalist culture and stuff, and then there's that little bit of backlash of this is developers are evil. This is around the time that Donald Trump was in movies and stuff, but this movie is definitely on the side of these guys are bad.
It's like it knew the future.
Yeah, so that sign is in front of this big old mansion, slightly run down, but still, a nice looking, old Victorian kind of house.
It's the kind of house everyone thought was normal in the 80s that everyone had, right?
Mm-hmm.
No, no one ever pictured the one-story shotgun house.
Exactly, and inside the house we see there's an old man who is kind of surrounded by Danny and his bros, and they're pressuring him to sign papers selling the house.
Yeah, it's a real shame what happened to his wife and all. Had the guy sign sooner, maybe it wouldn't have. So clearly they've killed
his
wife.
They say something about, they say, hey, we're really sorry to hear about her unfortunate accident. And he's like, right. You know it wasn't an accident. And they're like, well, who could say?
Can't prove it.
right. So, just the worst kind of 80s villains here. Beyond that, they even they are undercutting him. The offer originally was 60,000?
60,000.
Which is also crazy. That house would go for, easily three or four times that.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, 60,000 was still a pretty good number back then, but I mean, probably
true.
At least 100,000.
Yeah.
And it's also in Los Angeles, so maybe even 150. Well, I guess that would be $1 million home now, actually.
Right, yeah, I mean, probably.
Damn.
But they even undercut it, and they went down to 50,000 because he didn't sign quick enough, and he's just in a position where he can't fight back or try to renegotiate. So, he signs the papers, and Danny's like, all right, you've got 12 hours to get all your shit out, or we're gonna level the house with you in it.
Right.
And he just strolls out, you know, all badass. Like, I think him and the bros are out on the sidewalk. I just called them the bros for like the whole movie. It was like, fact, eventually, like, we'll slowly get all of their names.
Right, you don't get their names till they're about to die.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
Really. We do get Toby though, because Danny immediately calls him the R word for not closing the deal quick enough. Right.
Yeah.
How dare you make me come out of my ivory tower to deal with these normies? Right.
Yeah, this should have been an easy sell. It's ridiculous that I had to get involved in this one. Right. And so he's like, you got to handle it from here.
Right. And Oscar's like, yeah, we're really equal partners, aren't we?
And, right. Like,
what was the one dude's name? Austin.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He basically says some of us are more equal than others.
Right, yeah. Yeah, so Danny, you know, he puts on his sunglasses and strolls off to his, like, fancy rich guy 80s car.
They all hop in Beamers. It's gross.
Yeah. Right, yeah. As they all kind of part ways, the one
yeah, this is Craig Semple.
His car, he's having, like, car troubles. So, like, the alarm starts going off as he's driving. The radio keeps, like, flickering off and on. So he has to pull over. You know, it's like, it seems like the battery has died or something.
Right. Well, she specifically says it looks like it was overcharged, or there was a power surge is what she says. It's like, oh, she did this. She did this.
Yeah.
Right? Okay.
Yeah. Because so, like, he gets out and opens the hood as if he knows anything about what's going on in there. But then, yeah, another car stops to help, and this beautiful woman steps out, and she's like, I mean, the camera is making sure you know that this is a sexy lady. Like, she, you know, it gets like the legs step out first, and the camera lingers on them, and, you know, it's just all very seductive. And yeah, she looks at the engine and says, there's, you know, it's charge, or, you know, that it's a power surge or whatever. And he's like, you know anything about cars? And she's like, I know enough to tell when a car's fucked.
Right. By the way, is it me? Like, am I crazy? Because I could swear that, like, it steps out and that's just Galatea. Like, with, like, curly or curled hair, slightly wavy hair, right? It feels that way. Is it a different actress?
It is at first, yeah.
Okay.
She's similar enough, though. Like, it's not, like, you know, because, like, at first I was like, oh, did they, what's going, like, she just, is she wearing a lot of makeup? Because you assume it's going to just be her.
Right. But it's close enough,
yeah,
right?
It's, yeah. And she, you know, is like, well, since your car's messed up, like, how about I give you a ride? And so he, of course, like, I mean, he needs a ride in general, and also a ride from a very sexy lady who's very flirty. Sure, absolutely.
He's looking for a different kind of ride.
And she's making sure that he knows that that's on the table. Like, as she's driving, she's, like, erotically stroking the gear shift and stuff. Like, it's...
It's so weird that that was a thing. Like, that was, like, a thing, right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, and didn't, she's like, I know a place nearby, and they go to, nearby motel. Yeah. But it's like a classy one, you know? Like, it's like, when they go inside, it's not just like a shitty rundown room. It's that, like, 80s trashy classy kind of thing.
This is one that you'll find in Vegas, right? You're not paying $50 for just the rundown one. You're paying $100. It's slightly classy, yeah.
Yeah, it's a motel that has, like, a big bathtub, you know, like...
it has the heart-shaped mirror above the bed.
100%, yeah. And they start kind of, like, talking, and she's asking him a lot of questions about his job and his friend Danny. And he's just giving away information. Like, he's just not, you know... I mean, I guess, you know, he doesn't think he has anything to hide.
But obviously she's dropping hints, right? She's like, yeah, I'm a bookkeeper. I keep things in balance and make sure people pay their debts. Like, oh,
right.
Okay. Just,
yeah.
It's weird you'd say that, but okay.
Yeah. And, like, they start making out, but she keeps stopping to be like, so, like, you know, I bet you're, like, really close to Danny. Like, you'd lie for him. You'd cheat for him, you know, maybe even die for him. And he's like, yeah, maybe so. I don't know. You know, like, I never thought about it that way, but I mean, when you say it like that. And she's
not
like,
doing
much
actual thinking.
Right. Like, I feel like he'd be like, wait, why do you keep asking me so much about my boss? Like, we're trying to, like, have sex here. Like, what's going on? And she's like, well, you know, I got something I need to show you. And then she does the Mission Impossible and peels her face off.
Face off. revealing another face underneath.
This one is definitely Galatea. Yeah. And you know, he's like, wait, what? What's going on? And she just like grabs him and like hugs him really close. And all of a sudden, like, he's like vibrating with pain and blood starts splattering behind him.
She drill fucks him to death.
Yeah. Something pops out of his back and it's like this big elaborate drill thing. And you know, he falls to the ground dead, and it's, yeah, she's got like a Go-Go Gadget drill that comes out of her chest, basically.
Really? Like, she is Go-Go Gadget, just the the female assassin version of that.
Right. And she picks up the torn up mask that she removed, so you know, evidence, and right. just strolls out.
Like, we get a view of like a grid system, because we have to know now she is absolutely a robot, if we couldn't tell beforehand.
Yeah, definitely. And we cut from that to the courtroom artist that we saw earlier. So, yes, she is going to be part of the story.
A picture of a kid rubbing his head with a smoking gun. It's a weird picture.
Yeah, so, yeah, we'll find out her name is Allison, and that, like, she's kind of stopped doing the courtroom drawing stuff. She's, like, a real artist now. So, yeah, of course, she's got an edgy sort of drawing. Right.
Well, this is and her thing, right? She's drawing pictures of kids living their life, which apparently involves a lot of drugs for these just kids, literal children under the age of 10.
Right.
And apparently promiscuous sex amongst kids. I feel like there's a crime for that, specifically.
Right. Thankfully, we don't see any of the sex pictures. We just see the drugs and the guns. But yeah, her her agent's there, and he's like, yeah, I mean, I love what you're doing, but it's not going to, like, I appreciate it, but no one's going to, you know, we're not going to be able to sell a book with these kind of drawings in it. So
yeah, because she's an artist, she specifically says, I won't castrate my art, which kind of comes back later on to a degree.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So like, she's like, you know, this is the real world. This is the, you know, it's the edgy 80s. You know, this is, I want people to see what's really happening on the streets. And he's like, yeah, I mean, I get it, but like, you know, we also have to make money, and that's not going to work.
This is not going to sell coffee table books, right?
Yeah. And she's like, well, I'm not going to do another coffee table book of my courtroom sketches. Like, I've moved on as an artist. And he's like, wait, I've got an idea. What if we have your courtroom sketches, and then we do like a Where Are They Now, and you go sketch new drawings of the people from the trials, what they're doing now. And, you know, that'll give you this angle of, like, you know, time passing, and you can kind of, like, that can be your, you know, clever artistic way of using these pictures that, like, it seems like she's sort of made a name for herself. She's sort of famous for her previous book of courtroom sketches.
Right. Basically making her bones off those previous things.
Yeah. So it's that deal where, you know, she's like, I'm an artist, I want to grow into new things. And he's like, yeah, but we want to do the thing that made you famous, because that we know that sells. And so cleverly, he's like, here's a way where we can do both. And she's like, yeah, okay, that's kind of an interesting idea. I could maybe do that.
Didn't you have a boyfriend and she's like, detective named Clippy?
Yeah, she's like, yeah, I haven't talked to him in a while. I should check in, see what he's up to. I bet he's gotten really fat and grown a mustache now. And we immediately cut to a fat cop with a mustache.
I wouldn't call that guy fat. Like, he's a donut. Sure.
Yeah, he's not at all fat. Like, yeah, if he's fat, I'm fat. But, like, you know, that's definitely what the movie's trying to, like, they're juxtapositioning that. Because then, like, he walks past, and then another guy walks through who's a very handsome guy.
Yeah, a guy who looks like an American werewolf, actually.
Yep. Yeah, it's nice to see him still getting work, you know?
Yeah, I mean, still, you know.
Yeah. Right.
David Naughton.
And he is Clippy. So, what's his name? His name's Clifford
Dunn.
Is it Holt?
No, Dunn.
Dunn. I knew it was like a little short one syllable last name, but it becomes a running joke. It's never explained why, but everyone else, like, his name's Clifford, and only she calls him Clippy, and he hates it, but he, right, you know, puts up with it because he really likes her.
Yeah.
And so, of course, the police, they're investigating the, you know, the motel drill murder that we just saw happen. and everyone's like, what happened here? What drilled this giant hole in this guy's chest? That's very strange. Also, he still has his wallet and all his money, so it wasn't a robbery. You know, this is a very strange, strange murder here. And then as they're looking through his wallet, Clippy sees his business cards and is like, oh shit, this is one of Danny Emerson's friends. So this is going to be a more complicated situation.
Yep, we finally get the name of Craig Semple, and yep, Danny Emerson. You gotta love it. So yeah. Let's go to Danny Emerson and his boys. So immediately, he's like, all right, so somebody's gonna have to pick up Craig's slack now that he's right. dead.
Yeah, I mean, which shows you right away what kind of guy he is. He does not give a fuck about this friend that died. Right.
He doesn't have friends as much as he has toadies or servants. Yeah.
And they're really leaning into this business developer as evil. Like the boardroom is dark and their logo is the globe being grabbed by this ominous monstrous hand. He's just evil as hell.
Yeah.
But the rest of the bros
for the 90s.
Yes.
Yeah, not even then really, but still.
Right. And all the guys are like, but he was our friend. We should be sad. He died.
Right. They literally call for a moment of silence.
Yeah. And Danny's like, yeah, he played hooker roulette for too long and he finally lost. And he's like, well, we could do maybe 30 seconds of silence.
Right. I feel like though, if you're with a hooker, it's bad business to drill your Johns to death.
Right.
That kind of stops the repeat business, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But as you said, he observes 6 seconds of silence.
Yeah, he agrees to 30, and it's about six, and they're like, was that 30? And he's like, yeah, it's plenty of time. We're fine. Yeah. So they all sit down to continue with their meeting, and we cut back to the station where Clippy is now talking to the medical examiner, I didn't recognize him. He looked kind of familiar, but I didn't look him up. But he's a really great addition to this movie. He's not in it much, but he adds a lot of comedic moments. He's just a really funny guy.
Yeah, David Lander. What was he in? There's a very famous show. I don't know why I can't recall it. I feel like an idiot. Well, Bob Newhart, obviously, and Barney Miller and stuff like that. But it wasn't Joan. It was, Laverne and Shirley, of course. Yeah, he was Squiggy. Squiggy from Laverne and Shirley. And
gotcha.
He's been
yes.
in so many other things.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And he's great. He's just a medical examiner who is he's gotten to a point where he's kind of jaded on the gross stuff of his job. It doesn't,
now he just gets
you know,
excited
it doesn't
when it's novel.
Yeah. He's just having fun being a medical examiner. So they're making jokes about the death, Clippy's what was the cause of death? And he's like, well, a giant drill through the chest,
That kind of does he's that, right?
He's like, I don't know if it was loss of blood or the giant chunk of his spine that got removed, which I don't know what killed him first.
Either one. I feel this guy is definitely the kind that eats a sandwich over the body.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, that's
now,
definitely of that.
Spaghetti over the body.
Right. They're talking, and then Clippy's boss comes over and is like, hey, come with me. I need to talk to you about something. And Clippy's like, okay, yeah. So they go to an interrogation room or an office kind of to the side in the station. And there's a woman there from the DA's office.
Right. This is the only scene we'll get with her. She's Agent Trips.
And she's basically we've been building a case against Emerson for a while. And we're really close to moving on him, so we don't want to spook him. So I know that this guy was one of his, his toadies or whatever, but don't fuck this up for us. Keep this on the DL. Don't get wild with your investigation because we've got something bigger. So now Clippy's kind of stuck in this place where he needs to investigate the case, but he can't be as aggressive, so we're kind of setting stakes here so that he can't just go all out as a cop in this movie.
Right. Absolutely. So then we actually get Allison makes a call to Clippy, and she's like, "Hey, I know we had a really bad breakup and all, but I also want you to do me a random favor, please."
Right. And like as he's like walking in, she's at his desk and she notices a business card or a photocopy of one of Craig's business cards and is like,
he's one of the guys who did the R word.
Yeah, yeah. So she's like, she tells him about the book that she's working on, and then she's like, "But what's going on with this? That was a case that I dealt with."
Right. He just wants her gone. He's like, "Get out of here."
Yeah, he's like, "One, we don't have resources to help you with your fun little projects. And two, as far as this one goes, I obviously can't comment on an ongoing investigation. I'm not telling you anything about that." She's like, "But, I'm going to keep looking into this. Like, you can't stop me." And he's like, please. Like, he just had this meeting. He knows what's up. And he's like, just cool it. Like, leave it alone. And she's like, "Yeah, I'm not going to." And like heads out. And then we go back to, Emerson's office from there.
Yeah, Oscar is, I think it's Oscar, is looking at a picture of all the guys together when one of them wasn't dead.
Yeah, and he's like, "Man, we used to be the five, people used to call us the Five Musketeers."
It's like, "You were the only one who called us that."
Yeah, no one ever called us, and then we have a secretary who comes in and she's like, the secretaries are trying to pool money, we're going to send flowers to Craig's family.
But man, she is so obvious. Like, she's so obviously not a normal secretary. Like, yeah. They couldn't signpost it hard enough.
Right. Yeah. Like they like cranked the sexy knob up a little too high for just generic background secretary. Like, they want us to notice her,
Yeah.
So of course, as soon as she walks out, that's what happens. Like the two guys start talking like, "Hey, when was the last time you dipped into the secretary pool, haha?" And
one guy's like, "I don't shit where I eat. That's a kind of a bad idea have a office affair."
Yeah. And then they're talking about Craig, and they're like, "Should we start protecting ourselves? Like, is something coming after all of us?" One death, it's unclear. Like, it could be completely unique, its own situation, or maybe it's something's coming back to bite us.
So we're going to cut to a little bit later, and the guy, Toby Worth, is that his name? I know Worth is his last name.
Yeah, I think so.
So he's talking to a fucking government agent, and he's like, "I'm ready to give them all over, man. Just give me protection. We're sending them away."
Right, yeah. Obviously, these guys are—they're realizing that it's every man for himself. Like, they're losing that whole loyalty to Danny at this point.
Well, apparently, also to everyone else.
Right.
At least this guy.
Yeah.
But we also get a shot of that secretary doing her makeup just slightly earlier, and we're like, "Oh, this is where she's going to get this guy, right?"
Yeah. No, we hold off for a little bit, and instead we go back to the police station, mm-hmm. where now Clippy's boss is talking to him, and Clippy's like, the court reporter chick, she's gonna start nosing into stuff,
right? And the chief's like, "Great, keep her busy."
Yeah, that's now your new job. Like, stop investigating the murder and just run interference on this girl to protect the DA's case. And Clippy's like, "That's gonna be we have like a history," and the he's like, "I don't care. You tell me about the history later." Like,
after the job, yeah.
Yeah, do your job. And he's like, "Okay, fine." From there, we cut to Allison's apartment, where she gets a knock at the door, and it's Clippy.
A bottle of wine.
Yeah, he's got a bottle. I thought this was pretty smooth. He's got a bottle of wine, and he's like, "I think you left this behind at the station when you visited me earlier." And she's like, "I don't think so. I don't remember having a bottle of wine." And he's like, "That's weird, because I wasn't at my desk before you were there. Where could this bottle of wine come from?" They're being very flirty. It's kind of cute. She's like, "All right, come on in. I guess, if it was in the lost and found, we might as well make use of it, right?" And then we go back to Worth, who is...
just like, "Hey, we need you to put on this tape recorder in the middle of the fucking bar."
Right. And Worth's like, Let's just go back to the back alley. We can't do this right here. So they
this is where the secretary's going to get him. I know it. I just know it.
Yeah. Yeah, so we see her, like, kind of, you know, giving him, like, she's watching him as he leaves. Like, very, again, very, like, they want us to notice she's noticing him. Mm-hmm. And then we go back to Clippy and Allison. The drawing, was it of Allison?
Yes, it was of her drawing herself.
Yeah.
Very meta.
Yeah, she's got, like, a nude self-portrait that she's showing Clippy. And he's like, yeah, looks good to me. Like, yeah. It's a, that's definitely a move, you know, like, here's what I look like naked. Are you interested? You know?
Right. And she's just kind of talking about the case. She, like, she's talking about the case and all of her art, and, like, she's rambling a little bit. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. Of course, because this is a movie, he kisses her mid speech, I guess, to shut her up or something.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Definitely. Yeah. And so then we go back to the alley where the agent is trying to hook up the recording device. And Worth is like
weird in his suitcase.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, he's getting the recorder out and there's just a pair of high heels in there, like bright pink high heels.
So it's like, oh, you're one of those FBI agents.
Right. Yeah.
You're following in the steps of your predecessors.
No, yeah.
Apologies,
and,
I guess.
And Worth is like, you know, because he just has to be a sketchy dude. He's like, so, well, is there any, like, under the table money I might get out of this deal? And right. Yeah, like, you should be happy to just get immunity out of this. But this agent's like, yeah, he's like, sure, yeah, we'll take care of you. Yeah.
But he starts, like, coming on to Worth. Yeah. Like, he's starting to flirt with him.
Yeah, he says something like, you know, in my line of work, you know, I deal with a lot of real low lives, real scumbags. So I'm very deeply moved to see, you know, that you just want to do the right thing. Like, it's, you know, it's touching.
Yeah, it's like, I want to treat you well because of that. And yeah. There's an implication hanging over.
Yeah. And suddenly the agent,
like, I'm not into this, man.
Right. And the agent just tears his shirt open.
This is the best shot.
It's so weird.
His
and so,
chest
like,
inflates to a pair of breasts.
Yeah. Yeah. It goes from a very, like, you know, flat, masculine presenting chest to just suddenly having boobs. And then, you know, last time, you know, she, like, pulled the face off, tore it off like a mask. This time, like, light.
She's Sailor Moons.
Yeah. Like, light flashes and cracks, and the face just, like, disintegrates and melts away. And there's Galatea.
Yeah.
And of course Worth's like, wait, how? I thought you were dead. And she's like, did Danny tell you that? Look how wrong Danny was.
Pins him to the wall by the neck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in a way that's like almost a little sexy, but then she just keeps pushing and like until his like it's a really like a weird it's a really cool shot. Like
she doesn't
tear his head off, she doesn't choke him to death, she just pushes until his head falls off. Like, she just melts through his neck and spinal cord until the body falls down and the head's just hanging there.
Right. And it's like his eyes are moving and it's like he's trying to say something and then the head falls down like a Wile E. Coyote skit.
Yeah.
It's wild. Like, I mean, content warning if you're sensitive to that because there's little dangly neck bits afterwards.
Yeah, I feel like this period of, like, you know, late 80s sort of action movies leaned into, you know, like, you think of, like, RoboCop or Terminator or something, like, I really do appreciate this era where, like, gore and action were, like, friends, you know, and, like, it's just fun, like, and these kills, they're all kind of clever and different, you know, so, yeah, it's, you've never seen anything quite like this.
No,
this
honestly,
murder.
You haven't seen anything since.
Right, yeah.
Which is wild.
We go straight from this, you know, murder to Allison's apartment where she and Clippy are in bed. They have
smoking cigarettes, so you knew what happened. No,
yeah,
happened.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he's like, "All right, fine, I'll help you with your project."
Right.
They start kind of talking about like what she needs, but then
he gets a call on the beeper.
Yep, yep. Nice fucking 80s beepers. Movie thing. We got a beeper. So he, you know, if you don't know how beepers work, which you, probably some people listening here probably don't.
So before cell phones, these landline phones required you to do, to call people back. But these beepers were kind of an early version of that, right? So someone would call that number. It would actually get a ring. You wouldn't be plugged into a wall or anything like that.
And, yeah.
But it's just their phone number. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah, like all you would get on the beeper is just a phone number to call back. So he does. And, you know, of course, it's, you know, that there's another case. Like, he's got another murder to investigate. Somebody's out sick, he tells Allison. So he's got to pick up the slack.
Well, she's a little upset. Apparently, this is what caused the big rift in their relationship to begin with. Because she's like, yeah, of course, you have to go do your job. And it's like, yes, he has to go do his job.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, which I get, you know, I get it also that she'd be like, well, you know, we're trying this new thing. We just had sex. Like, it'd be nice to, like, lay around and cuddle and talk, you know. Like, he has written something down on a pad, you know, the address that he needs to go to. He tears it and he leaves. And then, of course, right away, she does the classic thing of taking one of her, like, charcoal pencils and, like, shading over where he had written. And
she gets a rubbing.
She can see the address and immediately leaves to follow after him.
Which, that's amazing, by the way.
Yeah.
Like, not even a second after he leaves, she's like, I'm on it.
Right. And it's funny. So, like, we cut right from that to the crime scene where Clippy is investigating. And, of course, this is the, you know, the beheading that we just saw. This movie is quick. Like, you know, we don't drag our feet between, you know, we saw the murder. So it's now it's time to investigate. He gets there. He sees that it's another one of Emerson's friends, and he's like, oh shit, this is really bad.
This is all connected.
Yeah, like, it was bad enough that the one, but now I know the DA's on the, you know, like, this is gonna be really bad. This is gonna get complicated.
So how can we make it worse? Allison shows up immediately.
She is not sneaky at all. She's just right there asking questions, bothering people. And he's like, I told you to leave this alone. Like, this is not good. You are gonna get mixed up in something. You're gonna get hurt. And he's like, just go home. You didn't see anything. You don't know anything. Stay out of this. Like, people keep ending up dead. Do you want to end up dead? And she's like, I just want to, this is important. I need to know what's going on.
Yeah. By the way, did you notice the Confederate flag in the bar?
Yes, I did.
This is a bad place. Yeah. We don't go here.
Yeah. So there was a time when the Confederate flag was just kind of normalized. Like, it didn't necessarily
south.
Yeah.
By the way, this is in fucking LA. What do they care about?
Right.
Confederate South.
LA had nothing to do with the Confederacy in any way.
Right. I don't think there was an actual American California at that time.
No, I don't think so. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I mean, obviously, it's always been a symbol of the Confederacy, which is tied to slavery and racism. Yeah. But there was just this time where it was sort of normalized, and it was just like, this means I like country music, and, you know, like, it's just kind of you know, like,
that's what they were saying out loud.
Mm-hmm, yeah, like, you know. And then obviously there were the people who, like, you know, were more tied to it in that way, but, like, you know, like, I have my family is all very rural, you know, they're, you know, redneck hunters, that kind of thing. My brother has a Confederacy tattoo that he probably should get covered up at this point. He's had it for a long time. But yeah, this was that time period where it doesn't necessarily mean that we should be afraid of racism happening at this bar, but obviously still not a good look, especially looking at it from today's lens.
Yeah, coincidentally, I think a year or two later, after this was released, there was the Rodney King riots.
Mm, so, yeah.
You know.
Yep. yeah, it's definitely good to see it sort of, like, specifically looked at as we know what this means now, and, like, you know, if you see one, you know what the people are trying to say. Yeah. And we can try to get rid of it from, like, public spaces and government buildings and stuff. I appreciate that things have moved in that direction as far as all that goes. But yeah, different time, like, you know, obviously. Oh, when we watch all these old movies, it feels like we have to say that a lot, that, like, oh, things were different back then. But yeah, in this case, yeah, it's definitely worth noting, at least.
So then we cut to Galatea walking into a lab with Albert. And she pulls off her scalp.
Yeah. A classic thing to show that this is, if you had any doubts that she's fully a robot and not just, like, a cyborg, we can see inside her head. It's all, you know, there's glowing shit going on in there, little lights and LEDs and stuff.
Yeah, she's got, like, this weird glowing, like, liquid ball of brain. inside of her head.
It's just like green ooze or something. It's and
that's the science bit. Yeah. It has to be extra green and glowy.
And the lab is just so 80s, you know, it's very like big computer banks and stuff, you know, it, Albert, like the brain part, he like connects something to it and downloads some data from it and watches, he's got a video monitor and he's like, okay, playback, you know, what just happened basically. And he watches the murder and he's like, ah, yeah, I love
it. Right. Like he's enjoying this, like, this is a sexual thing for him now.
Yeah, like when he watches it the first time, it's like, that's weird. And then he's like, play it back, but slower. It's like, oh, no, no. Okay, that's when it's like, okay, this is a horny thing. Like he is right. Into this.
This man is horny for vengeance.
Yeah. And we go from that back to Emerson HQ, where the two remaining bros are talking about the, you know, there's been two murders that now it's no longer a coincidence, you know, and they're like, what's going on, Danny? Like, this is
one of them makes the comments, don't lose your head, and everyone starts laughing. It's right. Like, ah, gallows humor. I know that one.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really good. Yeah. So, yeah, they're all trying to figure out, like, they all know now something is up. We don't know who's after us, but somebody's after us.
Right. And it, kind of the unasked question is kind of, Danny, is this you? Are you cleaning up loose ends?
Yeah, yeah. They definitely, like, they're asking him, like, how can we protect ourselves? But also they're like,
from you.
How can we ingratiate ourselves with us so that, you know, if you have some doubts about our loyalties, we can take care of that so that you don't. Like,
right.
Yeah, it's one of those where it's like, we don't exactly trust each other, but we're all we've got. So right. We're going to circle the wagons and hope for the best. and so we go from that back to Allison, who's again talking to her agent. And, you know, she's like, there's something's going on here. There's been two murders. I think it's Danny. I think he's tying up loose ends. She's set up a meeting. She's going to talk to Albert.
Right.
And, you know, she's like, I want to see if he'll let me have access to the case files. Maybe I can figure something out that the cops overlooked.
Right. There's even the suggestion, like, I think it may be Duncan, her editor, is kind of like, so why would he kill his own alibi? Like, that's kind of weird, right?
Yeah.
I like how this guy just gets drug in as a fellow investigator. He's just a fucking editor, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, he has no, he wants her to succeed because it'll get him money, but, like, he doesn't need to be this involved. He's getting into trouble, like, by accident here. Like,
sure it is.
So we go from them back to Emerson's office, where now Clippy has arrived. He's investigating.
There's a comment of, I guess you're the three musketeers now, commenting on the five musketeers.
Yeah, he's like, because the other, you know, the guy's like, yeah, they used to call us the five musketeers. And, you know, he's like, Clippy's like, well, now you're the three. And he's like, oh, that's pretty good. Yeah, I like that. And he's like, that's the actual one. That makes more sense than this silly thing you made up.
We get then this Fairweather again.
Yeah, the same, like, you know, unnecessarily attractive secretary. And she's like, we're going to raise money again for Worth's flowers this time.
Yeah.
And Harbolt's like, he's trying to, you know, flirt with her. And he's like, okay, go around the office. But, you know, I know it's pretty close. And sometimes if you ask for too much money from people, they kind of get a little stingy. So if the pool is less than it was last time, just come to me. I'll make up the difference.
Right, but make sure it's after hours when not a lot of people are here. We can do stuff that illicitly.
Exactly, yeah. And she's like, oh, that's very generous of you. And, you know, so she walks out, and then Clippy is about to head out too, and he's like, you know, you should probably be pretty careful because something's going on, and I'm investigating, but I can't be everywhere at once. And, you know, there's probably an axe hanging over your head at this point.
Right. So Allison and Duncan show up at Dr. Morton's home.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he has enough sense to stay in the car while she is walking around this man's house.
Yeah. And Albert does a pretty good job here of, like, you know, they ask him about, like, the recent murders, and he's like, I don't care. I mean, I don't have anything to, like, I don't feel sorry for those guys, but I'm not interested. You know, my sister's gone. you know, I have no dog in this fight anymore. Like, I couldn't care less. I'm not following the news about them, whatever, you know. And Allison's like, well, can you help me get access to the case files? And he's like, no, I don't want this dug up again. I am moving on. I have to, which obviously is a lie, but he does a good job of, like, selling it.
Right. He even tells her, leave it alone. Don't bring up the past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she's like, but I think it's Danny. Like, I think he's getting away with something. And Albert's right. like,
Morton just, at this point, Morton just has to walk away. Right.
Because mm-hmm.
he's like, yeah.
Yeah.
They're going to get this motherfucker finally.
Yeah.
Friends.
I can just, yeah. Like, I have sort of started sort of like an avalanche here that I don't even have to really do anything with anymore.
Yeah, but Morton doesn't leave anything half finished. He makes sure to finish everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, he's just pretty much like, I said good day, sir. You know, kind of sends her right. out. And
but she realizes, oh wait, Harbolt, aka Oscar, he was the third one to testify. The other guys died in order of testifying.
Yeah.
So he's next. He's on the chopping block.
Yeah. So she leaves and, you know, she tells her, you know, her agent that, you know, she wants to go back to Emerson's office and try to talk to him.
Yeah. Oh, then we get a great bit between Clippy and the doctor or the yeah. coroner.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like so excited about this one. Like,
right. He's like he was decapitated and strangled at the same time.
Right. Yeah. Like he
calls it a Baroque murder.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where, like, he, as he's talking, he keeps getting louder. Like, he's a mad scientist, basically. Like, he's, like, right. yelling, with, like, how cool this was at the end. And then, like, when he gets, he's like, oh, oops. Like, I kind of got a little over. It's like, it's the same thing as, like, when somebody asks me about something I'm really excited about, and then yeah. suddenly I'm like, oh, I just talked too much about a thing that they didn't care about, and I feel weird now.
Oh, that neurodivergence. That makes yeah. sense. That's why I like this guy. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but obviously Clippy is like, oh shit, are you okay? Do I have to worry about you?
Yeah.
He's like, I just get really excited when there's novel ways that people kill each other, you know?
Yeah.
I've been
yeah.
doing this for so long, it's been boring.
Yeah. And so then we go back to the Emerson office where the secretary is talking to Harbolt.
Harbolt is talking to her breasts.
Right. He writes her a check for $500 and she's like, whoa, that's way more than... then the difference, and he's like, right. You know,
get yourself something nice.
Yeah, you're doing a kind thing here, so I just paying it forward here. Yeah. Save a little bit for yourself.
No ulterior motives at all.
Right. Yeah. And then he gets a call from his secretary, you know, in the little desk box intercom thing, mm-hmm. that there's a woman downstairs named Allison to talk to him, and she's like, should I send her up? And he's like, no, send her away. I'm busy.
Right. I've got someone to do, something to do.
Right, yeah. So, you know, the downstairs secretary is like, no, he can't see. You'll have to come back another time. And Allison immediately, she's like, oh, okay. And then immediately just tries to go through a door to sneak
in. Well, Duncan tries to run interference. He's like, hey, what's that there on your screen? And she's both, and the secretary's like, I'm not having this shit. No, ma'am.
Yeah.
And, like, locks the door before she's able to get to it.
Yeah, so they send her away, and then back upstairs, the secretary is, like, she's making sure he knows she's into it, too. She's like, well, you know, which it seems silly. Like, they're in his office. Like, this yeah. is as secluded as you can get, but she's like, I know a place. And he's like, oh, yeah? And she's like, the secretary break room. Let's go over there. And he's like,
right.
All right, let's do it.
Yeah, it's like she's luring him somewhere.
Yeah.
It's going to be even harder for people to find him.
Right. So they there's like a big table in the break room, and she lays him down on it and straddles him.
They're going at it too. Like.
Yeah, yeah. This is it gets hot and heavy real fast. They're making out. Meanwhile, we see Allison is in the parking garage where she's been kicked out, and she sees a freight elevator and is like, maybe that's my chance. Her agent is smart enough to be like, I am gonna wait down here. I'm not following you. Yeah.
So we're going to go back to Harbolt and Miss Fairweather, and you know, in they're still going at it, and he feels like he's accomplished something special, and yeah, she's like, yeah, you absolutely have,
and
yeah,
this one's so good. She, you know, so this is where Galatea reveals that, you know, that the secretary, as we all knew, was going to happen.
But here's the thing. So she pushes him on the table, right? Mm-hmm. And, like, she's still riding.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, you know, maybe this will be, you know, a good way to go out. Nope. Because when she reveals she is Galatea, she then says, basically, I'm going to kill you and kill all your friends. But also, she wants to give him something, or she wants something to remember him by.
Right. Yeah.
I'm like, and is she going to have a baby? Like, that's a weird thing to do, robot.
And yeah, and so, like, as you said, like, he's like, he's a little scared, but he's also like, well, you
turned
know,
on.
Still had sex, right? Like, he's still into it. And all
he's
of a sudden,
the praying mantis mindset.
Yeah, and then there's just like a sound.
It's a buzzing sound.
And there's a buzzing sound, and then the buzzing sound becomes like a slurping sound.
Yes.
And we see his face, and it's just like he's kind of in pain,
but
still kind of into it, maybe a little bit.
Yo, I'm not gonna lie. I thought she like she castrated him.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, oh no.
Yeah.
Kind of, but not really. Turns out.
Yeah, like, because that's what I wrote. It seems like he's just been castrated by a robo-vag, which, yeah, like you said, it's sort of that, but the next thing we see is Galatea kind of, like, slipping out, like, leaving, and as she's leaving, she sees Allison being, like, chased out again by secretaries. Then we see down in the parking garage, you know, Allison's agent is waiting around, and Galatea appears, and he's like, wait, I normally wouldn't, you know, I know it's creepy to be like a dude talking to a lady in a parking garage, right. But
you're really attractive and you look familiar.
Yeah. You look very familiar. And she kind of, you know, stops and he's like, I'm sorry. I thought you were someone else. And right. So she starts to walk off.
Then doesn't he say Gally?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she turns and he's like, fuck, it is you. And then we just cut away and it's like, oh no, that's not good. Back up in the office, Allison makes her way into that break room and finds Harbolt. And it's not just that he's been castrated. Like, we do see that his crotch is bloody.
I think that she drained him, like, of all his fluids.
Yeah, his precious bodily fluids.
She did take something to remember him by.
Yeah, he's, like, all shriveled. Like, he looks like a raisin. His face is shriveled up, even. Like, she has drained him. Which, I don't think that this is possible in any way. But it looks cool and weird, and, like, it's great for this movie.
Like, the only thing I could think of is that she has one of those things that you find in the mortician, the basement of mortician's office.
Yeah, where they, like...
drains the blood.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's, like, that's record, man.
Right.
Plus, she's got to go I don't know. I don't want to know the physics of this. I'm going to mess with myself on that.
Allison, obviously freaked out by this, rushes back down to the parking garage, and she finds her manager or agent or whatever.
He's surrounded by a bunch of people.
Yeah, they're all trying to help him, and she's like, oh no. Like, he's, you know, I led him to this. Like, this is my fault, you know.
We find out she broke his neck. At least it was something, you know, semi-quick.
Yeah, not as brutal as what happened to Harbolt.
It's just kind of like you were in the wrong place at the wrong time, my man.
Yeah. And then we cut right from that back to Albert's lab, where he is watching the playback, as he loves to do.
But now he's got all three of their deaths on screen at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, you know, you see that, like, sometimes on the internet stuff where, like, there'll be, like, the guys who watch, like, eight different porns at the same time. Like, <Yeah. it's, laughs>
That's a level of ADHD that I haven't unlocked yet.
Yeah.
Just all that focus.
Yeah. But, I mean, he's so focused that he happens to notice on the newest video, there's Allison in the background. And he's like, that's the girl who was bugging me earlier. You know, she's not giving up. She's going to keep being a thorn in our sides.
Yeah, we're going to have to take that one out, right?
Yeah. We go right from that to Allison, who is being comforted by Clippy, you know.
I don't know if she's being comforted. Like, he's coming down on her pretty hard. He's like, it's your fault Duncan's dead now. If you had just stayed away.
Yeah, like, he... At first, he's just kind of, like, holding her or whatever. But, like, she's like, it's got to be Danny. He's or somebody working for him. And Clippy's like, it doesn't matter. You're an artist. I'm a cop. Let me deal with this. Your friend died because you wouldn't stay out of it, and I told you that this was going to happen. It's going to be you next time. Just please leave it alone. He is coming down hard on her, but this is one of those things where it's like,
it's tough
for your own good. Like, yeah. I wanna scare you into not making more bad decisions.
Yeah, I wonder if that ever worked. Ever.
Right, yeah. And then we go straight from that back to Albert. He's eating dinner and having a glass of wine, and we hear the Moonlight Sonata being played. Right. And
turns
of course,
out it's diegetically.
Yeah, yeah, it's Galatea, or Robo Galatea. He like gets up from his plate and walks over to her as she's playing. And he's like, it was beautiful. And she's like,
it's missing.
Was it? Something's not right. And he's like, no, nothing's missing. I would know. Like I could tell if every note was right where it needed to be. Everything was perfect. And she's like, maybe that's it. Maybe that's what was wrong. We're getting the sort of divergence here where like, he's the scientist and he wants everything to be precise and perfect. He appreciates the precision of her as a robot, but she still has a little bit of her pianist feelings. And she's like, that's the whole thing. Like, you can program music to be perfect, but it's the soul of a person playing it and it being slightly imprecise that really gives it, the feeling there. And obviously he's like, stop worrying about feelings. That's not what you're here for. Obviously they're kind of on different pages now, which is, concerning him a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like for the longest time, he's basically had full control over her. And now she's asking, did I ever have any friends? Was there anyone out? And it seems like he didn't know. It's kind of like the only implication is I was your only friend, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like, he cared about, which may have been true, it didn't seem like there were a lot of people there supporting her, which, a lot of times when you have people who, dedicate their entire lives to a very specific pursuit, you have, Olympic gymnasts or pianists or violinists seem like that happens a lot.
Sometimes you ain't got time for friends.
Yeah. I feel like is where this becomes very much a Frankenstein story, like where she's like, I am longing for a feeling of humanity. Like maybe when I was a human, I was sort of robotic in the way that I did things. And now that I'm a robot, I want to feel like a human. I want to have friends. I want to play music the way a person would.
I kind of want to see the backstory of this movie made because it almost feels like a little bit like a House of Usher.
The
brother and sister are almost in love to a degree, but not really.
Mm-hmm.
But they're also extremely driven.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, obviously, if you've got, this virtuoso pianist and a NASA robotics expert, these are people who have drive to get to the top of their fields.
Mm-hmm. What were their parents like?
Yeah. And Galatea also says that the woman that was at the house that you talked to, I saw her at the Emerson office. What's going on with her? And he's like, no, don't think about her. Don't worry about her. She's like, was she my friend? And he's like, no. This isn't what you're here for.
Yeah, she was just an artist who drew you, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. Then we go back to the Emerson boardroom, and now we've got the one surviving bro, we finally get his name.
Norman Austin.
Yes. And he's by himself in the boardroom getting himself a drink.
But he gets a jump scare from Danny.
Yeah. He's scared because, again, the friends are like, is it someone in our circle or someone out of our circle that's doing this? And here's Danny. Like, am I about to die? Danny's like, we need to think. We need to figure this out. Like, we can work together. And Austin's like, I want to get out. I want to leave the country. I need to get to safety. And Danny's like, oh, you think it's me, don't you?
Right.
And Austin's like, I'm not saying it's you. I'm just saying it's dangerous to be around you.
Right.
So
they're dying around you, buddy.
Yeah. So either way, I feel like this isn't where I want to be. Danny's like, I can't afford to have you running off. If you start running your mouth, that could lead to trouble for me. So I'm going to keep you around, whether you like it or not.
Right. You're not going to go anywhere, buddy.
So now, yeah, we've got this mutually assured destruction thing with the last two survivors. And we go from them back to Clippy waking up in Allison's bed, and she's gone.
She left him a Dear John bear, basically.
She's left a note that says she's going to go talk to Austin, the last survivor. Is it Austin Norman or Norman Austin?
Norman Austin.
Okay, yeah. Because she says I'm going to go talk.
Names. That's all that matters.
Yeah, because I think the note says I'm going to go talk to Norman.
Yeah.
And Clippy's like, fuck. Like, again, she's not listening to me. She's going right into the danger. I got to go help her.
She's fucking with Emerson's boys.
Mm-hmm. And so we go from that right to Norman talking to Allison, and he's freaking out, and she's like, listen, like, you can still save yourself. Like, just, I can connect you with the police. You just got to tell them everything.
Before she does that, though, we get an ominous shot of a guy in a jumpsuit revving up the chopper to get Norman the fuck out of there. Because he said, fuck it. Danny may be coming after me, but I'm still going to try.
Right, yeah. So she's like, I got people outside. I can get you to safety. You just have to tell the truth. You know, this is how the police will protect you.
But we get surprised by a guy. Danny. Danny shows up.
Danny strolls right in, and it's like, oh, fuck. Like, this is bad. And Danny's like, Norman, why don't you step outside? I'll talk to you here in a minute. I need to catch up here with this lady. So, obviously,
have
Norman's
you seen
like,
Godfather Part 2? The Fredo scene? Okay.
Yeah. And Danny's like, so who do you work for? You know, are you FBI, CIA? He just goes through the whole alphabet soup. And he's like, you know, I don't really care. It doesn't matter what agency you work for. You can't touch me. No one can touch me. He thinks he's invincible, you know.
Well, he's kind of putting on a show, right, until Allison leaves and he's like, fuck, and knocks all the books off.
Yeah, he's a little scared, but he doesn't want anybody to know it.
Right. I mean, he's a great villain for sure.
Yeah, he really is. Like, he's just, and you know, again, it is very much like a classic sort of like 80s black and white villain. Like, there's nothing about him that's sympathetic. Yeah. We definitely know he's the bad guy. Meanwhile, outside, we see Norman, who he's like rushed out to the waiting chopper, and he's like, maybe I can still get away. Maybe this is my chance.
Well, it's like one of Danny's guys even tries to be like, hey, Mr. Austin, you can't go near the chopper. You're supposed to get in the car.
Yeah. And
we get another surprise.
Yep. There's Galatea, not in any kind of disguise this time. Doesn't matter. She just...
Well, she's in the one guy's jumpsuit.
Mm-hmm.
The chopper pilot's jumpsuit.
And she, grabs the Emerson's guard or whatever and throws him to the side and then goes over to Norman. And he's like, wait, just, you know, I can explain or whatever. You know, he's trying to just stop
I'll give
her.
You anything.
Yeah, and she just grabs him and just picks him up and just, like, he gets, like, half his head chopped off in the helicopter blades.
By the way, everyone else gets, like, their moments, right? He just gets fucking head chopped off.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no sort of, like, she's not going to tell, you know. It seems like, for the most part, she wants them to know what's going on. And, like, I'm going to make you feel the way I felt for a second and know that you are about to die. But no time for that here. He gets is it Dawn of the Dead?
Day of the Dead.
Day of the Dead, yeah. But, you know, yeah, she just picks him up. It's real great. Like, and
yeah, he gets a really close shave. Too close, actually.
Yeah. That's when Allison comes strolling out, and she sees, you know, Galatea just drops the you know, halfway decapitated guy. And Allison's like, wait. I think she calls her Gailey at that point, too. Yeah. She's like, Gailey? This is where we find out that Galatea is a little less autonomous than we really thought. Like, we see that Albert is in a van, and he's like, run.
He's kind of controlling her.
Yeah, it's like voice command kind of thing. So Galatea starts running, runs up some stairs, and she's on, like, rooftops, and we get, like, a chase of Allison, like, following after her.
I feel I feel like that's a bad move after you saw her just lifted a guy up into a chopper blade. But yeah. Who am I? I'm not a protagonist, I don't think.
Right. And you know, it's like they're kind of cat and mousing across the roof, and eventually Allison like is looking around. She lost track of her, and then she turns around and there's Galatea like right behind her.
Pushes her.
Yeah. Off the roof. Yeah. She falls, but like, you know, catches like a fire escape ladder, and she's just like hanging there. And right. Galatea and Albert is like watching her, and then at the very last second, as her fingers slip, she grabs her hands and starts to like lift, or not, her doesn't grab her hands. It's, she grabs wrist. Her head, right?
She grabs her wrist, but brings her up and holds her head.
Yeah.
But so she's just like, let her go.
Yeah. Just drop her. This is it. And, again, Allison's like, Galatea. And she's like, wait, you know me?
Are we friends?
Yeah. Like it kind of gives her pause, and Albert is still like yelling, like, drop her, drop her. Yeah. And then we just cut away from that to, it's like a little later, Clippy and the other cops are investigating this crime scene.
Right. He specifically says, where the hell is Allison?
Yeah, we see, he sees her car and he's like, fuck, you know, like, what is going on? Like, there's no sign of her. And we cut from that to, Albert's surveillance van is now speeding down the highway. Albert's driving. Galatea is in the back, and Allison is there with her, tied up. And Galatea's like, "So were we friends? What? How do you know me?" And it's like, and I feel like a lot of times you'd have, you know, she'd be like, "Yeah, we were friends. We were best friends." Yeah. But Allison, she's like, "No, you know, no, I knew who you were, but we never really spoke. You know, I drew your picture for TV. So like, I spent a lot of time around you, but like we're never close," which I feel like is maybe more endearing in a way, like that Allison's not lying to her.
Yeah. She's being honest and, you know, being vulnerable, especially in a bad situation.
Yeah.
But they don't have too much time to worry about that, because Morton announces, we're here.
Yeah.
This is it. This is the last one.
Yep. And so he gets in the back and he's like, why are you involved? What are you doing? Like, why won't you just leave us alone? And Allison's like, I mean, I get it. I agree with you. Those men deserve to die. But you know, but what you're doing isn't right. Like, you're using a dead girl to, to take out your revenge. And that's not fair to her memory. And he's like, well, it's not fair that she died and the guys who caused it are still alive.
Right.
So they're like, you know,
punished at all.
Yeah. They've got sort of like differing ideas about, you know, how things should have happened.
And of course, Galatea is like, well, so, you know, I don't like killing people. So maybe we can stop. And he's like, just kill the one guy and no more killing after tonight. It's all done.
Yeah. In fact, she's like, what happens after that? And he's like, I'll write you a new program. And she's like, what, more killing? And he's like, no, you'll get to be yourself. And she's like glad to hear that,
but he creepily rests his head in her lap.
Yeah, again, kind of this vague hints of like an incestuous connection there. We cut from that to the boardroom where Danny is all alone now.
He is packing heat though.
Yeah,
he's got a shotgun, his revolver, he's half drunk.
Yeah, he's kind of like falling asleep. He's like scared for his life here. He can't, you know, he's trying to protect himself, trying to stay vigilant, but you know, eventually you got to sleep.
Right. Well, he also has his own little, drunken business meeting or board meeting with the guys.
Yeah.
They aren't there.
Yeah. It's really good. He's like, all right, any new business? Nope. Okay. What about any old business? And that's when Galatea comes strolling in from the shadows, and she's like, Mr. Chairman, I have something I'd like to discuss with the board.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And
he's like, no, I'm fucking drunk. This is not real.
Yeah. This is the thing that they've both been building to, and she's like, you're just a man. You're so small. Like, is what I've been scared of all this time. And he's like, you're nothing special either. Like, I'm not going to be afraid of some ghost. And so he
shoots her, shotguns her.
Yeah, hits her with, like, I think two blasts, and her chest bursts open, and we see all kinds of wires hanging loose and everything, but it's not enough to actually kill her.
Right, so, but I think this is when he knows, oh no, she's a robot, she's real.
Yeah, yeah, this is not a ghost, something really bad is coming my way. So he goes running, she starts to follow him, and then we see
Allison in the van. She's breaking free, like, quietly somehow. Was he just using duct tape? I feel like that's a bad call.
Yeah, she's, like, slowly, like, either broken through the tape or loosened the whatever's the bindings are anyway.
Right, but there's a convenient wrench right beside her.
And then a comically large wrench. It is, like, a stupid wrench. I don't know what you would actually be fixing with this wrench.
No, the actual, like, car engine, I guess, or the van engine. That would be about it.
Yeah,
but yeah, I mean, and it looks like the guy.
Yeah, because, of course, you know, Albert is watching all this stuff go down through, you know, Galatea's vision. And yeah, so he gets knocked out.
Right. Now, Allison, if this was real life, she would have killed that guy with that wrench. It was too big to not have killed him.
Yes. Right. And so she sees that that Albert has been, like, trying to control Galatea through this thing. Then we again see, like, the grid, you know, Galatea vision. And, like, a screen says, like, emergency self-guidance mode, I think is what it says.
Engaged.
Yeah, so now that, you know, there's no person controlling her, she's got to, you know, sort of be autonomous.
Right. And she feels that. So she's like, that's kind of, you know, she doesn't say anything, but the actress conveys that something weird has happened. And she's realized.
Yeah, yeah. She's not used to being in control of herself. Mm-hmm. But she still kind of, you know, she follows Danny. Like, she knows this is still what I'm supposed to do.
And it seems like she set up traps, or not traps, but, like, she's funneling Danny onto the roof, it feels like, because he goes into the stairwell, and there's all kinds of desks and chairs and cabinets just blocking his way up and down the stairs.
Yeah, yeah. He only has one way to go. So, yeah, either Galatea has done this beforehand, or he did this to try to block himself in. But either way, it's not a good situation for him now.
Yeah, I feel like if you're running from something, you want as many exits as possible.
Right, yeah. And we see that Allison is watching all this play out through Galatea's eyes, and then is like, oh, fuck, I gotta catch up to them. I have to try to stop this. We have Danny running around through his, like, you know, sort of kettled situation, and Galatea doing, like, the Terminator Michael Myers slow walk, like, she just knows she's gonna catch up,
and Allison somehow trailing behind, Galatea following her. So we've got, like, a chain going on.
And then when they get to the roof, they're all sort of running around trying to, you know, everybody's trying to, like, do their thing, and suddenly Danny manages to sort of loop back around, and suddenly he has Allison held hostage with a gun to her head.
Right. And then Galatea's like, okay, I got you in my sights, so let's see what happens.
Yeah. But
Albert then shows up, and he's like, kill them both. Yeah. Take them both out. We're done.
Yeah. And I think Danny's so confused, because he's like, who's responsible? Who's causing this? Like, he's telling Allison, like, stop her, make her stop. And she's like, I don't have anything to do with this. I'm just a nosy girl. Like, I have nothing to do with the murders.
Right. And Galatea's, like, refusing to kill both of them. Mm-hmm. So Albert's like, all right, fine. We'll reengage command protocols.
Yeah. He said, like, access override mode says that, you know, a long number code or whatever.
Yeah. So basically he's taking control.
Yeah, and Galatea, like, tears start, like, dripping down. Oh, like, either, I can't remember, but, like, it looks like she's, like, crying at the idea of, like, having to kill these people. So, like, she's getting her humanity here at the end, you know? But not enough to be able to resist. So, like, it's like electric powers shoot out of her or something.
Right. Well, she still manages to direct it just towards Danny.
Mm-hmm.
She only gets Danny. But yeah, she electrocutes him to death, effectively.
He catches on fire. Like, it's, I mean, it's, which, again, is such an 80s thing. Like, we love to set a stuntman on fire back in the 80s.
Fire stunts were the best, right? But, so, of course, his dummy falls off the roof instead of him.
Yeah. Yeah. So he stumbles back on fire, falls off the roof. And then, they tossed a burning dummy off a building, which just looks great.
Right. But Albert, Allison sees the gun that Danny left. She goes for it. Albert gets there first. And he's like, well, you know what? Fine. I mean, Galatea won't kill you. I'll kill you. Yeah. We're going to finish this now.
But before he can do anything, the cops all arrive with, you know, with Clippy in the lead. And, you know, they yell, freeze, police, and all that. Yeah. And
they shoot him a couple times just so he knows they mean business.
Yeah.
Stop resisting. Sorry.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, Albert goes down. Like, I think he just gets hit in the shoulder, though. Like, and, you know, while he's down, you know, Clippy rushes to Allison, kind of pulls her to safety. Galatea goes to Albert and kind of helps him to his feet. And he's like, you know, they're on to us, like, help, you know, get me to safety. We need to go to a safe place. And yeah. If you remember, that was an important line.
There's only one safe place.
Yeah. Yep. One safe place. So she carries him, walks to the edge of the building, and jumps off with her brother in her arms.
And then we cut to moonlight. As they hit, we hear that, like, beep, you know.
We get, like, a brief shot of static as it's, like, the robot's vision, like, going out.
Right, but immediately then, after, we get the cut of the Moonlight Sonata starts playing.
Yeah,
very poetic.
It was really good. Like, I didn't expect, I didn't expect that to, like, hit the way it did. But, yeah, like, you know, we go to credits, it's just black and, you know, Moonlight Sonata, and it was just, like, damn, like, this movie actually, like, kind of got me here at the end.
Right. The one thing I would have liked to see is, like, this movie deserved an after credit scene where somebody brought her back, even if it was, like, the doctor, the police doctor. That would have been something nice, just to see his face being like, all right, she's up and running, she's alive, you know, something like that.
Yeah, it would have been nice for Galatea to get something a little better at the, I mean, I know she was basically a robot, but it seemed like she was finding her way to humanity and feelings. So that would have been nice to have her, like, not dead at the end.
But kind of the only way it could have ended effectively with Albert, at least.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. This is definitely a movie where, like, the people who, like, had to live were Clippy and Allison. We needed them to kind of, like, sort of ride off into the sunset, and we kind of get that with them. But, you know, like we were saying at the beginning, it is sort of strange to have this movie that is functionally a rape revenge movie, but, like, the survivor of the attack or whatever doesn't actually survive and isn't actually autonomous and in control of herself. It felt a little weird. Like, I did appreciate Galatea's arc of, like, finding her humanity as we go, but it felt a little strange that, like, she didn't have humanity right away as a survivor of an assault.
Is it me putting too much on this by saying, like, it seemed like the end of her life was all controlled by other guys, whether there was the section with Danny effectively controlling her fate up until her trying to reclaim her safety in her self-termination, and then after that Albert controlling her to get her own revenge, but kind of his revenge instead.
I think that's definitely an accurate like, and that's another, you know, we were, you know, as you said earlier, like, it'd be interesting to see her life before the assault, and I feel like there's probably, you know, some sort of coach or teacher, you know, like a Whiplash kind of situation at some it would be interesting to see a man behind her making her be a better pianist, and it'd be like, this poor woman has been pushed through her entire life by men. I feel like that would have been an interesting way to take this story, where she kind of maybe would get to reclaim some sort of autonomy at the end of her life. The only two times that she really feels like she gets to make a decision for herself is when she ends her life both times, you know, which is, I mean, that's, it's hard. Like, it's a really bleak ending, but, you know, in a way that feels sort of like the ending of Bride of Frankenstein, where, like, the one time that the Frankenstein monster gets to make his own decision is when he decides that he belongs dead, and that, you know, and unfortunately in that case, the bride character doesn't get to decide anything, and, you know, just becomes dead, against her own will. But, like, this feels like a pretty grim, bleak movie. It doesn't, you know, nobody really comes off in a good place at the end of this movie. Like it's not an optimistic movie.
No, not at all. Definitely cynical. And I mean, yeah, even Allison and Clippy are probably going to need some therapy after this, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, they've definitely gone through some really rough, and you know, we haven't gotten enough of their it's not the kind of thing where it's like, oh, they're happily ever after. No, maybe not necessarily. Clippy's probably still going to be a cop who's too dedicated to his job, probably more so after this. And Allison is probably going to feel lonely and jealous and hopefully be able to process this through her art a little bit, but yeah. You know, it doesn't seem likely that they're either one of them is going to have a great happy life after everything they've experienced in this.
Not at all. But hey, I mean, I guess arguably we got an abrupt ending there at the end.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing more abrupt than, you know, cutting from people falling off a building to static.
Not wrong. All right, but yeah, I mean, any other thoughts on it?
I think this is just, it's a really interesting movie. It's sad and thoughtful, and you know, it's not cheerful, but I think it's definitely worth your time. Like,
yeah,
it's a movie that's going to make you kind of like reckon with like the dark sides of being a person and pain, and you know, as we were saying, the loss of autonomy that people often experience for various reasons in their lives and everything. So yeah, it's definitely worth checking out for sure.
Absolutely.
I think a lot of like this era of just like quote-unquote trashy 80s action movies often, you know, kind of have these sort of like secret agendas that, like, you know, you can watch Terminator and just be like, hell yeah, guy exploding stuff, you know,
right.
You know, but there's always something there that, like, if you want to spend a little time and think about it. And yeah, I think this movie, like, you know, like we said at the beginning, like, it looks silly. It's got the big steel and lace and like the two different fonts, and it's, you know, it's definitely got some trashiness to it. But
there's some brains there too, right?
Yeah, yeah. Which I, you know, that's why we keep doing this show, is like watching these, you know, exploitation genre movies that have a little bit more under the surface if you want to spend time with them.
Absolutely. So Anthony, obviously this week we've dealt with some steel and lace. So let's keep the BDSM train running with some Frankenstein Unbound.
Yeah. So This is, I feel like, one of the classic ones that, like, you know, there's a lot of, like, you know, Frankenstein movies that you'll hear people reference a lot. And this is one that, you know, I feel like it's high time we finally got to this one. I believe this one's a late Roger Corman movie, if I remember right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, this is actually one that Corman even directed, not just a production. You know, it's like in the 90s. It's later in his career, but... I'm excited to get to this one. It's a really, it's been a while since I watched it, but I remember it being like a really kind of fun sort of, like, I think Mary Shelley is in it, but also the monster, like, it really plays with like time travel, even if I remember right. I'm excited.
We're getting some John Hurt, some Bridget Fonda, Jason Patrick. Come
yeah,
on.
Yeah. Raul Julia, just a lot of classic genre guys. And, so, you know, of course that's the thing with Roger Corman, is you often get like people that you're like, oh shit, this is a huge name actor, and you're just like, well, this was kind of before they were a huge name actor, or after they were a huge name actor.
Right, yeah.
Like, that's he's either like giving people their first chance or their last chance. But yeah, like, this one is another, you know, Steel and Lace is very sci-fi. This felt like another kind of sci-fi look at Frankenstein, that they seem of a piece in a way. So I'm excited to talk about this one.
Absolutely. All right. Well, anything else we got to say?
I think that's it.
All right. In that case, do be continued. That was my robot voice. It's not a good one.
Looks like you survived another episode. The Freakin' Cast is a production of FCR Media. It's hosted by Anthony Bowman and Eric Velasquez. Follow us on Twitter at TheFreakinCast, or send us a letter at TheFreakinCast@gmail.com. Our cover art is by Amanda Keller. You can find her at Keller Illustrations on Instagram. Our theme music is by Vivek Abhishek. Thanks for listening.